Hello, hello, hello. This is Dr. Aka. This is Truth Be Told.
And you remember who this is? This is Leroy Horton, and we got a special guest today.
Carrie Carter Shirelles.
Carrie. Pronounce Carrie. Get it right.
That's
Do
it.
Not mistake it.
That's
okay?
It. That's it. You know, we were just sitting there talking about it. We're like, you know what? One thing we got to do is get everybody's name correctly. You know what I mean? So we're going to do that. But, you know, I'm so excited to have you because I'm not sure if we've had a hygienist on here for a while. And the field of dentistry has changed a lot, especially during COVID and post-COVID. Mm-hmm. We've all kind of gone through a lot. And so we wanted to bring you on to just kind of tell us from, you know, from your point of view, from the hygienist point of view, what's happening with you guys? Because you've had, I remember there was a lot of hygienists that left dentistry. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of assistants that left dentistry, right? And now I'm just seeing, a lot of them also went through basically doing, what do you call that? Whenever you go from one office to another, temping. Yes. That was really huge where people were temping and you guys were getting paid. You guys were almost kind of like travel nurses. Like they were getting paid during COVID. You guys were
getting paid. They still getting paid.
Still getting paid. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, we still
there's a, there's a new king and queen of the castle now. And it's no longer the doctor. It's the hygienist. So Carrie, tell us about that. You've seen this shift in the industry where there's a high demand, a low supply of hygienists. Do you see that as a positive or do you feel like, you know, it's squeezing the dental industry and creating a rift in the community?
I think it's a positive in that my colleagues have been able to command and get more pay because quite honestly, the pay has been stagnant. So when I graduated in 2005 as a dental hygienist, I'm in Florida. So they were like, oh, you know, top dollar at that time was like $30 an hour. Mm-hmm. People were still getting that now. In Miami, some doctors will pay 26 temping. As an hygienist, 28 temping. And so now that because of the so-called shortage, now the rate has gone up to my area, 40, 45.
Where's that money coming from though?
Where's the money coming from? I'm a hygienist. When I worked at I've worked in private practice, public, DSOs. And so when I was lead hygienist at a very popular DSO, I know what my numbers were. The doctor did very well off of me in a short period of time. I produce very well. I try not to even say how much it was in some dental forums because then the doctors jump in and they're like, you're lying and everything.
Well, we're not. This is look. Let me just go ahead and say this, right? This is a safe space. Okay. We usually hate on dentists more than you could ever do. Let's be 100% honest, right? We usually hate on dentists way more than you could ever do. So if they're going to come after anybody, they're going to come after us. So don't worry about that. What are you looking at? What were you producing? What was something that you could actually kind of tell us?
So the amount they wanted hygienists to at least produce per day, ideally, was like $1,270 or $1,500. Okay. On a daily average, I produce at least $4,000, sometimes $8,000. Sometimes, wow. Not me, but I know a hygienist, one of my close hygienists, regularly, she's producing daily $8,000-$10,000.
Okay, so you got it. And Linus, what does an $8,000 day look like?
Right, yeah.
On a schedule for a hygienist? Because that's exorbitantly high.
It's very high, yes. And so basically it's a lot of SRP. And so the thing is what corporate dentistry, a lot of people think that is over treatment, but quite honestly, a lot of times the cases that I saw, it was due to under treatment. It was due to them. Maybe they were going to a dentist for a long period of time and they kept getting, you know, just floss or, you know, brush and floss and come back in 6 months. And they had so much perio. Some perio definitely referred out to the periodontist and some was kept in-house. Basically, every day I came home smelling awful. Every day my husband was like, why do you smell like that? I'm like, it's the perio. Like the smell
perio
was in my
breath
heart.
Is high.
It's bad. It's bad. Yeah. So doing I did a mixture of procedure. So SRP, perio maintenance, bleaching, and I was not doing double hygiene. but it was basically having a treatment plan coordinator, us working as a team and telling the patient what they need, making sure that they trusted us. So it all really kind of depends on the team and the support that the hygienist has. Now, I still was able to do that ethically. Let's put that out here because I don't want people coming for me, but I still do that ethically. I slept well at night and I did what was needed for my patients and I did not do any overtreatment. I did what they needed.
So it's something that I always well, Horton, we actually had a conversation about this, and we actually do believe that there is underproduction or under
Under treatment.
treatment of perio. So
Severely.
we all agree on that part. We all agree on that. The one thing that I'm kind of confused at, and I want to kind of get you to expand on that, is so if you're doing SRPs, right, how many quadrants were you doing and how much time did you have to do this? Because my biggest thing that I've noticed is when hygienists are doing SRPs, they're basically doing the whole mouth cleaning, deep cleaning in like an hour.
No,
And I
that's
don't know
not.
how anybody could ever do that. You know what I mean? Like, I've seen that. Have you seen that, Horton?
Oh,
Where
I see.
hygienists are given like an hour to do like a whole mouth SRP?
Yeah, no.
I see that all the time, and I don't want to put that on a hygienist. Usually, it's the
Right.
doctor that
That's it.
kind of
That's it.
creates that program and says, "Do it."
That's it.
And the hygienist is just like, "I just work here. I do the best that I can
Yeah.
in an hour." You know. So, how many patients would you see on an $8,000 day?
And let me say the $8,000 day didn't come all the time. That
Right,
was
the
like a high
rarity.
day. That was a high day.
Okay.
Typically, average would be maybe $4,000 day, 5,000. It wasn't, I saw 8 patients a day generally. So
And so
give
if
or
you
take, sometimes it was 4 patients a day.
yeah.
So it really just depended. And I got the amount of time that I needed. So I was able to determine the amount of time I needed for my schedule. So some patients, if they're pre-booked perio maintenance, I had an hour. I didn't see new patients other than to go perio chart in the room and see what treatment that I believe they needed and then discuss with the doctor. But basically, it's not like I was seeing an exorbitant amount of patients a day. And that's what I think is a problem is so some of the doctors that I see on social media complaining about the high pay that they have to pay hygienists and then the low reimbursement, which is awful and everything. They also are basically a lot of times it's a pro female. So they are trying to reduce the amount of time to 30 minutes, 30 minutes per patient and just having the hygienist run around doing prophies all day. So at least if you don't have a lot of time, then you don't have a lot of time to explain to patients what you're seeing and you're missing things. You're not doing proper assessments. You're not doing blood pressure. You're not doing a perio chart. You're not doing oral cancer screens. You're not doing any of these things. And then the hygienist doesn't have a time to tee up the doctor and say, hey, look at this treatment that's in here that I see. Or, you could be a great candidate for clear liners or something. You don't have time to do any of that. So when you actually have more time and you're in a partnership with your hygienist, then there's time to actually see what needs to be done with the patient and to build that trust with the patient where the patient believes what is being said by all of the clinicians.
So if you're doing a lot of SRPs and you know things like that because you want to be productive, of course, right? Who's doing the prophies? Like
I
most,
did prophys too.
so you were
No,
mixing it. So
I do.
you
No,
know
I
the
do everything. You
doctors.
can't. No one wants no hygienist. Okay, first of all, my favorite procedure to do as a hygienist is SRP. That's just
Okay,
me. That's not every hygienist's favorite procedure to do. I
right.
like this. I like to see the gross black calculus come out. Everything.
Yeah.
I like to see that transformation. So I like to do that.
Okay.
But a hygienist also has to take care of their body. So if you're doing that all day long, that is gonna hurt because,
Okay.
it is physical taxing. You're not just using the Cavitron. You shouldn't just be using the Cavitron. And no, you shouldn't be doing a full mouth SRP in an hour. I actually fell out with a dentist that I attempted at an office a couple months ago because I came in to help on a Saturday and they had like 8 patients and all day long was SRP in 1 hour and no perio chart. I'm like, well,
So you've seen that before.
oh yes,
Yeah, where they're
people try it. People try it. And
And how did you resolve that situation? Because you're temping, here's your information, you know, here's your schedule. What did you do to like, did you have to cancel some patients or what'd you end up having to do?
well, it wasn't a good day because first of all, it wasn't a good day because first of all, the doctor was out. Nobody else was there other than someone at the front desk who actually wasn't familiar with anything. They were actually like a student at the college. So I walk in and that's my schedule. And I'm just like, what is, you know, God was on my side, I would say, because basically every patient canceled, but like two, I had a perio maintenance. I had a perio maintenance patient. And then the last patient was SRP who needed nitrous. And I told them, hey, I can't do nitrous. The doctor's not here. So talk to the patient before they come all the way here. And I ended up spending time with the patient that was needed. And then telling them that they needed to come back for further treatment because, you know, I can't do all this in a day. So, but yeah, it happens all the time, unfortunately. And that's one reason why a lot of hygienists are kind of burnt out with the field, because we feel like we're not giving the time that we need with the patient. And that if we think the patient needs SRP, then the doctor may be like, nah, just do a prophy, because maybe they don't want to lose the patient. And so then there's under treatment there. And then we're concerned about our license and the ethics and, you know, not doing supervised neglect on a patient. So there's so many different things that are kind of going in the hygienist mind with the industry. So yes, there's over treatment, there's under treatment. There's being told that you need to do this procedure in 30 minutes or full mouth an hour. The patient has, you know, it's a lot going on. And yes, I like being a productive hygienist, but not at the expense of ethics or making sure my patient is being taken care of. The main thing is about the patient. When you do great patient care, money always follows. But if you're just so concerned about production or just get them in and get them out, then it's...
What was your average fee for SRP? Because the only reason I ask is out here, I'm in the northwest of Seattle area, our hygienists are commanding like $80, $90 plus an hour, plus signing bonuses and all that. And before I sold my offices, like every time we would do a working interview, if we scheduled two SRPs back to back, we would get whining and moaning and they wouldn't want to come back, right? And so let's say you're doing $4,000 or $5,000 a day. And let's say, would you say two quads in an hour or one quad in an hour on average? What would you say your...
It depends on the case. I mean, it depends on...
I get that. Yeah. Average though.
Because I've been such a hygienist for such a long time, 19 years now, like I probably, depending on the patient, I personally can do a quad, two quads an hour usually.
Okay, usually. So let's say we give you seven of those.
Yes, all day. Right?
What's the fee? If you're producing $5,000, are you charging like $500 a quad? What's the fee in Florida? Because out here, like with Delta Dental, you might be getting like $160, $170 a quad, you know, and like $70 for a pro fee. And so a lot of times, like in my practice, we used to be looking for SRPs, but it was, even if you stacked the SRP day, you never got to $5,000 with most insurances. So what were you guys charging?
Well, I think the fee probably was about 400 a quad, and plus they had adjuncts. So plus there was adjuncts at that time. So if the patient is agreeing to do different adjuncts that are added on there, yes, it's going to be more.
So interesting. Let me ask, and I think the one thing that people have to understand is the adjunct is usually where most of that money comes from. And tell me if I'm wrong, right? Whenever they do lasers or a Restin, or they do, you know, irrigation is something they charge for that sometimes. It's like the adjunct. It's really, you know, the quadrant itself, maybe like you said, 200, we'll say, right? Just to kind of make the math easy. But then the adjunct is what really increases that price. Uh-huh. And then the patient goes from something that might be $600, $800, you know, and they have to pay a small portion to now having to pay a good amount because of the additional stuff. And I'm not going to sit here and you know, litigate whether or not it's needed or not. That's not my thing to do. I think if you listen to our other episodes, you might get that from that. But the key is the adjunct is what's really kind of adding to that. Here's a question for you. Were you forced, or do you feel like, you know, with the DSO, with the private offices, do you feel like you were kind of forced to kind of sell that adjunct part of it to increase your production for that day?
No, I was able to do whatever I wanted.
You, okay, man.
So basically, in my particular office, I treated my operatory like it was my office.
Gotcha.
So,
but that's not the case with every hygienist. I mean, you're a very special hygienist.
No, that's
not
the case with every hygienist.
Right.
I mean,
what are you hearing from your coworker? You know, your colleagues. Like, what are they saying about their autonomy?
Sometimes they feel like the doctor. Let's say they want them to place fluoride varnish. So they're like, what? They get in trouble because, you know, why didn't the patient commit to that fluoride varnish? Or why didn't the patient commit to something? So that's when there's a whole issue with hygienists, and that they feel that we feel we got into the field because we want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why a lot of us got into the healthcare field, because we were empaths and we want to help people. We want to be people pleasers. And then at some point, the field just became about production. It just became about money. And we don't always feel like we're helping people. And so there's a mindset is, my mindset is that I'm not necessarily selling treatment. I'm selling health for the patient. So if I believe that this is going to help the patient, if I know this product I have put in my husband, you know, the adjunct, and I feel confident I've seen the results, then I have no problem recommending it to the patient.
Okay.
Now, there's some hygienists, because of that production and how much money they can make, they will put that 360 around every single tooth. And that I have a problem with. If you feel the patient needs that much, they need to go to the periodontist. They need a whole lot of other treatment. So if you're doing that just to, you know, if you're creating a pocket, a deep pocket, so you can put that in for your money, then that's ethics. That's wrong there. But I haven't really had where doctors have pushed me to do something. I've had situations where I was mad because the patient needed treatment and I was told to do a prophy or have the patient sign off on that. In fact, I actually probably prevented the office from getting a litigation, a suit, because I kept saying the patient needs SRP. And the doctor was like, oh, she doesn't want it. So this sign, have her sign off on the refusal form. And I'm like, that doesn't hold up in court from what I've seen. That could affect me and you. And so he's like, just have her sign. So then I'm the hygienist having the patient sign, side-eyeing, and then writing in the chart, as per doctor such and such, and then telling the patient, you really need to see the periodontist. And every time, you really need to see the periodontist. The last time I saw that patient, I was like, I'm not saying anything to her again, because I'm tired of the look. I'm the only hygienist at this office at this time. And I was like, I'm not saying anything. I'm just going to do my probe readings as per doctor does do her little sign. Then I'm like, your teeth are mobile.
What do you think leads some doctors down that kind of dark path of supervised neglect? And it's a gray area, right?
So we don't want to say that. The reason I say that is because you even said it, right? You don't. Sometimes it's not purposeful. It's just more of like the patient is saying this, and we're just trying to appease, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, we've had this debate on this before. My debate in my office is, if we diagnose SRPs, it was SRPs or nothing, or you can walk.
Right.
There was no signing away standard of care and all that. Other doctors, though, will say, oh, well, you know, just do a regular prophy, which to me means if you're the hygienist or you're the doctor doing the cleaning, you're intentionally leaving crap behind, which I can't. You know, if we do fillings and someone says, I don't want a three surface filling, I just want a two surface, what are you going to do? Leave decay behind? Like, why is that okay for hygienists? So what do you think leads some doctors down that path of not being as prudent and caring about the periodontal health?
I think sometimes if they keep getting, like, from the insurance, where the insurance is now denying the claim. So they're sick of, you know, having to eat that, because now the patient is yelling at the office, why did you do this? And, you know, they're not paying for the claim. So they would just rather not do it. I've had where some doctors at one of the offices I worked at, one corporate office. So we had a new doctor come in, and he basically would take the patient and do everything. He would do a roundhouse. He would do everything and then send the patient to the hygienist. And then we're just like, what are we supposed to do with this? So it's like sometimes they just want to eat up all the little insurance money and then send the patient. So it's not really.
So they did crowns and everything else before the cleaning.
Everything.
Got you.
Gotta love
This
it.
one
Gotta
particular
love
doc, he would do everything and then send the patient there. And then it's like, there's no insurance money. Yes, there's no insurance money, but not just that. Like, how can I do all this treatment underneath all this that you did? Like, I can't do it. So I
So
think it's a lot of different things there, or they're afraid of losing patients. So especially if it's a private office, they don't get all the time as many patients as a corporation where we can be like, yeah, do it or don't do it, because we know a million patients are coming in. Whereas a private office, they may not get that many new patients, and so they just want to keep that patient or maybe the family that comes with that patient. So it happens all the time. I've as a hygienist, especially earlier in my career at private offices, I've been told just more times just to do that cleaning or
I
do
want to
as
make
much as I
sure.
can.
I want to make sure that I explain what just happened. So most of the time, when you go to a dental office, you're supposed to be seen by the hygienist and/or doctor to basically make sure that everything looks good. If it's not an emergency, you usually get the cleaning first, whichever one, deep cleaning or regular, cleaning. And I put that in quotations, but like you want to try to get that done first. After that, then we take care of any cavities or anything else. That's kind of the order. Unless it's an emergency, you're actually going to the dentist specifically for pain, then we take care of your pain, then you get the cleaning, then you get anything else that's not an emergency. So that's why it was very unusual that this doctor basically said, skip the first part and go straight to my part. I mean, am I saying that correct? It's
No,
skip everybody else's part and let's just do my part, the part that benefits me financially. I might tell me if I'm wrong.
that's
Right.
exactly what it is,
Yeah.
and that's
And
why
that's why
I
it's
was
weird.
just
I don't think it's that unusual, bro. I feel like, especially since
no.
I'm traveling, I've had to have so many conversations with doctors about out-of-sequence treatment. I mean, they're planning implants and patients got 7, 8 millimeter probings, or there's probings, but it's all 3-2-3, and you look at the X-ray and you're like, there's no way. And then I had my, I think I told you last week where I had to go in there and reprobe, and there was like 11, 12 millimeter probings, and patient just had a prophy done last month,
So do you, let me ask you this question real quick. When it comes to the overall environment of hygiene, if you're on forums, if you're on Facebook, if you're on Instagram, wherever, we all gather, do you see that hygienists are even happy anymore?
I mean, I talk about burnout. So I'm a
Yeah.
hygienist who's a public speaker who talks about burnout.
Right.
Yes. So there's a group of hygienists. I still love my field, even though I do a lot of non-clinical aspects right now.
So
So
that's
there's.
why you're still happy because you're doing less clinical. No, I'm
No,
serious.
honestly,
No, I've noticed that.
the last job I was at, I was happy as well,
Okay.
even though I had less responsibility. So during the before the shutdown, that last office I was at, I was happy, even though I was trying to make some changes there. So that office, actually that office, I was not allowed to do SRP because it was a perio office. So the periodontist wanted to do SRP. I had to do full mouth debridement,
Right.
the initial deeper cleanings for patients who before they saw the periodontist. Prophy's perio maintenance. So for me, I was a little bored,
Well, let's
honestly, and
talk
that's
about
what launched.
everybody out. Let's talk about, because you're very different. We've established this. You are not the norm. Okay. I'm talking about, like, let's talk about the rest of the hygiene group here. The rest of, like, for example, I believe most dentists are not happy in the dental field because of, like you said, burnout from lack of, production, from insurance, from doing more and expect and getting less. You see, all that stuff to me has led to a field that a lot of dentists are not happy. What does that look like for hygiene?
I have a Facebook group of 9,000 hygienists. My Facebook group is about burnout, dental
Okay.
hygienist burnout, prevention, recovery, career options. So a
Yeah.
number of hygienists are looking for other options.
There it
And
is.
mainly that's because of how they've been treated and continue to be treated in the dental field. So I myself have trauma. Like
Okay.
the office that I made all that money and production for, I barely can drive past that office now. Honestly, it is right next to one of my favorite little restaurants that my husband brought me some food from today. I barely didn't want to go near there. I was traumatized because of the hostile work environment. And so, unfortunately, in the dental field, like many other fields, a lot of people are burnt out because of the trauma that they experience at the dental office from
Can
the
you tell us
patients.
the trauma? Like, what trauma are you seeing and hygienists dealing with?
Well, I mean, they're getting yelled at. They are, if they tell their doctor maybe that the schedule is too overwhelming, or they would like to have a lunch, or frankly, they would like to pee or something, they are getting
Overrated.
fired.
Overrated. You don't need all that.
Yeah,
That's
we don't have medical insurance to treat those urinary infections, but yeah, that's another thing, not having proper medical insurance, having PTO maybe, but not being allowed to use it supposedly, not having proper instruments. I have my I probably could, if I wanted to, I could have my own dental office, I'd go to jail, but I have my own instruments, my own Cavitron, my in or inserts. Why? Because not all offices will provide hygienists with the proper tools. So you may want us to see a million patients a day with like little butter knives. So, it's not having the proper tools, not having the proper time, being yelled at regularly, having to present patient treatment. So I've had to do that. So I'm having to tell patients that
Hate that.
they need to have this expensive treatment done that the insurance doesn't cover. And I'm getting yelled at it a couple times a day. So it's a lot that we deal with, honestly. And then if you're of color, now you got to deal with microaggressions and being a black woman, being called a mad black woman, basically. Or it's a lot of stuff that we deal with. So am I happier? Yeah. Yeah. My husband was like, when are you going back to work? And I will temp for offices that especially certain ones that I have previous relationships with, or certain offices. But at this time, no, I don't know if I'll ever go full time again. My son is going to go to preschool soon. Maybe I'll do a couple days a month temping for people. But I'm very happy in all that I do. And now a lot of hygienists, they really want to do the same. I had my own webinar to teach them how different aspects of dental hygiene, non-clinical, that they could go into. We do need clinical hygienists because we have to service our patients. I can't legally keep my husband's teeth in the house, so we do need hygienists.
Well, let me ask you this, because this is something I had one of our friend, mutual friends, Walt, text me. He said, "Hey, I'm trying my best to make sure that we have staff of color, right?
Okay.
But what happens is, especially every younger hygienist, especially ones that are black, they come in with these, I don't want to diminish it. They come in with these aspirations of being a social media influencer and aesthetic. I do Botox, I do this, I do that. They want to do everything but hygiene. And they're still young. So to say that it's burnout after 19 years, like 19 years of doing anything, burnout 100%. But it seems like there's this cultural movement, even with us doctors, we see it all the time. Everybody wants to be this superstar YouTuber posting these cases. Where do you feel that motivation is coming from, even amongst the young ones, to push into, I guess, the kind of the popularity field of being an influencer?
But you're not saying that it's just with the minority hygienist. I mean, are you
No,
saying that it's all?
I am absolutely saying that. I'm
Oh,
saying
you're specifically saying that it's
this
with the minority.
specifically.
Oh,
I see that because I
okay.
work with a lot of providers
Okay.
at all levels of color, and I just see that a lot. It's like we're driven by this, well, I have to be,
More.
more as far as popularity goes, as
Okay.
opposed to I'm young, I've only been in the field a few years. I need to get excellent at what I'm doing. It's always a side hustle. And that's something that we've seen in our community a lot. There's always a side hustle. Do you see that amongst your hygiene colleagues? Now, mind you, I'm not including you in that because you're 19 years in the game.
I do
That's
like 10
different.
side hustles, so I'm
That's
like,
different.
I don't know. I encourage everyone to have a side hustle because I was laid off during the recession. I had a brand new house, brand new car, and got laid off and could not get a job. And that hit hard, and it hit harder being of color because it's even harder for me to get a job as a clinical hygienist at times. So I encourage my hygienists to have a side hustle. Now, yes, you want to make sure that you are proficient in the job that you do. When you're seeing patients, you're seeing patients. So you want to can the hygienist I was at, when I first graduated is not the same hygienist that I am now. And if I was still regularly practicing clinical hygiene, I still would have to be building those skills. I still want to learn GBT. I still, you know, want to make sure I know all the newest perio guidelines and I'm staying up to date on things. Even though I'm not necessarily practicing clinical every day now, I still take CE courses every week. And so you still want to make sure that you're learning and growing in your profession. Now, the younger generation is different. How, you know, what I dealt with or what I allowed to happen to me throughout my career, they're not dealing with that. They say deuces in a day, bye. And especially now with the shortage, they don't have to deal with that. They'll go find another job. So I can't really speak to that, honestly, because a lot of my colleagues have multiple things that they're doing. They are content creators. They do have podcasts. They have these different things. But that's who I'm hanging around with.
Right.
And maybe that's why I'm doing all these great things. But someone who's just starting out, I honestly, when I talk to dentists, I encourage them. That's just me. If that person is really liking social media, good into social media, how's your social media? Because some of the dentists that I see, it's horrible. What they put on there is horrible. Like a patient doesn't want to see the bloody tooth you just did. Like that's horrible. So, you know, use what they know to help grow the practice and support them in that. Yeah.
So
and that's what I think.
So from what it sounds like, and tell me if I'm wrong, it doesn't seem like the pay is the problem, because in the end you're still saying get a side hustle, do something else, right? So the pay is not the problem. Then what is the problem? So I can't keep you by paying you, right? I can give you $100 and not make you happy for 2 seconds, but in the end you're still going to want to do other stuff. So what can a dentist do to keep people for a long time? Because a lot of patients love to see the same hygienist, especially once you connect with that hygienist, right?
Create a culture where I want to stay.
So what is that? But tell us, what does that mean?
Create a pot. So that office that I made all that money for the office, and I did get a kickback. Okay, I left that office and went to my last office and made less money, really. Didn't have all that didn't have all the perks that I had, but I had peace of mind.
What does that mean? What does that look like?
It means I'm not crying in my car. I'm not feeling like,
So what are the causes? So we get the trauma. Yeah. What caused the trauma? Like, right. What are some concrete examples of what was causing you to cry in your car?
She said getting yelled at before.
I was not so much yelled at, but I was made to feel like I didn't have a voice. So okay. I was lead hygienist, but I wasn't allowed to lead. I asked to be mentored to be like dental hygiene manager of a region if that became available. And I was told no. That wasn't ever going to happen. Okay. Even though I was producing great, and I was really working with my colleagues and different things. It was a lot of microaggressions that was happening. So I guess for the first time in my life, I just really felt black.
Oh.
So I just had that moment where it doesn't matter how I speak, if I speak a certain way, or if I dress a certain way, or if I act a certain way, or if I'm so professional, I was just made to feel like, it doesn't, you know, you just had that, I just had epiphany. It doesn't matter. And so I was just being lied about. And I hardly cry, especially back then. And then I just end up wailing my car. And that's not an unknown experience to hygienists who look like me and hygienists who don't look like me. So I'm given a course in 2 weeks overseas about the empowered hygienist. And I just didn't feel empowered. So what that looks like is not feeling like you have a voice. So if I'm telling the doctor that, hey, this is what I think the patient needs, and the doctor's like, you're just a hygienist. Like, why are you even telling me this? Or, hey, I need these tools. You're not getting anything. So it's just like a million little pricks to where you basically feel like you're nothing. You're a healthcare provider, you're licensed, but you have no autonomy over your whole profession. And so basically, paying me $1 million doesn't really matter. I've interviewed for an invite with the same company, actually, for a big position, training, doing like digital training or something. And people are like, well, how much were they going to pay you? I'm like, it didn't matter. I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to be flying around the country and doing all this and being away from my child and my family and working 80 hours a week. It doesn't matter if they were going to give me $3 million. I wasn't going to do it. So it's that. It's not money. People think it's money. Okay. Money is great. Love money. It's got to pay my bills. Everything's expensive. But it's really, how are you treating me? Mm-hmm. So there's an office that I wrote about in my book. Those hygienists don't leave. They don't leave. They've been there. So when I was an assistant, They've been there for 25 years. In fact, when I was pregnant with my son and I went there for treatment, they told me one of the hygienists was retiring, and I had no intentions of probably working clinical. And I said, can I work here? Like, I was like, I finally found an inn. I've been wanting to work there as a hygienist my whole career, and I finally found the inn. And it's
So,
because of how they treat their team members. No one leaves.
right.
That's the
And
thing.
so the moral of the story is it's not about money. It's about ethics and feeling like you have some agency, right? You have a voice. You're able to participate in this system, program, service that you're providing. Being that, saying that though, and I 100% agree with that. I'm not even going to debate that on those merits. What is then the motivation for the side hustles? Because anyone, me and Walt have talked to a bunch of people, right? Side hustles for most everybody is never as lucrative as just being good at your job that you've been trained and educated to do. For most people,
Yeah,
right?
most people. We gotta say
There's
that.
always the special person
Gotta
that
say
has that moment of exposure at the right time, they blow up, whatever. That's like 1% of people. So what is the motivation? What is the end goal of these side hustles if it's not about money?
growth and fulfillment. So a lot of times as a hygienist, there's no growth. So it's like you're a hygienist, you hit ceiling. There's nowhere else for you to go.
What
And
does
so
growth
like,
look like for a hygienist? Can you explain that part so we can kind of, I guess, understand what you mean by growth? Like, what is the pinnacle of
it's going to look
hygiene?
different for everyone. So if you're in a corporation, you could go all the way to, they have multiple positions. You could be hygiene manager, become regional manager, hygiene educational coordinator. There's a
What about
depends.
private office?
Private office usually not as much.
Okay.
Honestly, there's unless you become like the hygiene lead
Okay,
or
like a restorative, or we do they have restorative hygienists in Florida like we do up here?
I saw that they changed the law for that. I was
Oh yeah,
looking up, I saw that they
that's something in
changed
the
that.
Northwest. We have to where it's almost like an expanded function assistant, so
Right.
you can, you could do fillings, you could do the final impressions after the doctor preps. So there's, it's kind of motivates and invigorates someone if they've been doing just hygiene for a while to all of a sudden have an added skill set. I was surprised that that's not in every state. I thought that would be kind of
No.
universal.
We just became able to do anesthesia a couple years ago.
Oh,
So
see, well, let me ask
we're in
that
Florida.
question.
We got issues.
What?
So we
Well,
just
no,
became.
that's very true. Actually, in Texas, they're still struggling to do that, but that's another story for another day.
That's the
So let me
South.
ask you this, right? When it comes to hygienists, you said you want them to kind of have a voice and so forth. And when it comes to hygiene, do you feel like, let's just say the doctor's like, hey guys, I want us to be productive, right? I'm going to pay you what you want to be paid, but we also have to show that you're worth that pay, right? We all have to agree that you have to be worth what you're getting paid, or the office is going to shut down because they can't afford you, or they can't, right? That has to, we have to agree on that. So if we're going to pay you what you're worth, that means you have to do enough production. But there are some people that just don't want to do that. They might say, hey, that's too many SRPs for today. How do you, as a dentist, combat that to kind of get that even level where the hygienist is still productive but still has an input? Does that make sense? Because not every hygienist is going to be like you. And again, I'm trying to use you, I'm trying to take you out of the equation because you're the outlier. Right? Most hygienists, I'm not sure if they're going to want to hustle and work as hard, right? But still want that pay, right? And still want that voice. So how do we balance all that out and still run a business?
Well, it's difficult because, like you said, not everyone is going to hustle like me because I'm just a
Yeah, take
different breed.
yourself out
I'm
of the
just a
equation.
different breed. So
How do you help a
basically,
dentist understand? How do you help a dentist balance this out?
it's going to be have to be communication and training. Basically making. I just talked to a colleague who's going to be teaching hygienists this, like developing a course. So I told her, first of all, what you're going to have to do is hygienists don't like to hear about sales and production. Most hygienists, because then it seems grimy. Like one of the first dentists I worked with, he told me I needed to be like a used car salesman. Now that was awful. It was awful in my mind. Like, because when you think of a used car salesman, you think of someone
It's never a good time.
stereotypically.
Right.
Yeah, you
Never.
think stereotypically someone who's, trying to get over you and lie about you, lie. And I don't want, I was not raised that way. I was not raised a lot. You know, I was raised a certain way, very, very religious a certain way. So I never wanted to do anything like that. But I came to understand after I did a C course that I paid for my hygienist, whatever, that what he meant was that some of the patients that we saw weren't going to come back. Like some of the children who had like maybe the Florida dental care insurance, they didn't always come back for the, you know, no show for their appointments. So if I was able to do sealants, get them in, make sure there was no decay, do sealants at that appointment. So don't just do the prophy and fluoride, you know, do everything that I could that the patient needs. So we may never see that patient again, but at least they had care. The proper way to say that would have been a lot better than what he did. So it's a proper communication. So you're not coming across at it's just production. You're coming about how can we deliver this patient care in the best way that's going to help the patient and also help the office. I want to be able to pay you this amount that you want. You deserve it. But in order to do this, the patient needs this. You know, we need to all work on our communication. So we're all saying the same thing. So the patient sees it. So we're using this technology that I paid for. So the patient understands. And then they're going to get the treatment done. So the problem is a lot of time lack of communication and how the doctor approaches the hygienist and then how everyone approaches the patient. Because I'm just like everyone else. When I go for to take my car in for the oil change, I don't want to hear that it needs all this other work too. I know. I'm just like, this is an oil change in, you know.
Jiffy Lube is the worst. They'll bring you out this long list, your air filter, your transmission fluid, your tires, your blah blah. You're just like, just change my oil, bro.
That's
Just
all I ask
change
for.
my
And so
oil.
that's how patients feel when they come to the office. They're like, just do my regular cleaning and let me out of here. I got to go to work. I'm on my lunch break and everything. So you have to create where the patient understands and they want that treatment. And then if your hygienist is resistant, then you have to discuss with them. But at the same time, every hygienist is different. And what do the tools look like that you have? So you can't just all of a sudden say, hey, I want you to do this amount of SRP. And you have this old Cavitron that's leaking and everything, or you don't have good instrumentation, or does your hygienist have proper seating so that they are going to have proper ergonomics and not be hurting all day? So, you know, there's a lot of things that have to be done. And then, like, what does your hygienist want their schedule to look like? How can you, like, I like blocks in my schedule. So there will be empty holes in my schedule since we saw a lot of new patients. So if a patient consented to the treatment, they could just move right in. Now, you know, I didn't have a problem depending on the number of SRPs I saw a day. You know, too much is too much, but at the same time, some people do. So if they need to have a variant of treatment, then they need to have that as well. You as a doctor, if you don't like doing crowns all day or at a certain time, you know that that's not going to be the best crown because you're ready to go home, then maybe it's not the best thing to put, you know, a crown at the end of the day. Or, you know, full mouth extractions at the end of the day when you're ready to go. Or when, you know, right before lunch, when, you know, I hate it as an assistant when there was a root canal right before lunch because that always meant something was going to be wrong, go wrong. Or if it was an extraction, you know, it was going to be a weird curved root, you know, look like a cow horn or something like that. So just think of how, what would you want your schedule to be? So don't just, you know, because you are the dentist, command the hygienist, hey, we need to make this money, we got it. But this is what your schedule needs to be like, and then wonder why nobody wants to work at the office. You know, just there's need to be more input both ways.
So you're at this office where you said there was a toxic work environment, right? And I've seen at times, because I owned offices for about 13 years, I had two offices. I saw some very, what I felt were very nice, personable, extremely brilliant hygienists beef with assistants. And I could never, I'm a guy, right? So I'm in the office, I'm thinking everything's hunky-dory. Then someone comes in and they're bawling their eyes out because apparently there's been beef for like 2 months. And I'm like, where? I don't see it, right? What do you think causes beef between women in the back office that a lot of us guys are just completely oblivious to?
Well,
What are some personality dynamics that you see that breed conflict amongst women in a professional setting?
Can I just say before you answer that, first you said hunky dory or hunky dory. That would already cause me issues just listening to you. That would have me beefing with you. Please, by all means, answer the question.
I think a lot of times doctors have a lot on their plate and they don't necessarily want to deal with those issues. So sometimes they have an office manager, but then the office manager may not always relay what actually is going on. So
So
my
what
courses.
causes what
Hey,
you
I'm
said
not asking about the
causes.
doctor. I'm asking specifically
What
the bruise in
causes
the
the
back.
issue?
What causes that?
Yeah, what caused the issue between the assistant and the hygienist? That friction.
Oh, I haven't been both. I can tell you that at times what causes the issue is like I what causes the issue at times is that some hygienists aren't necessarily nice to the assistants, or they feel like you're just supposed to just help them out. Some hygienists and some assistants feel like, you know, here's this hygienist supposedly making so much more money than me. Why do I need to help you out? You're making more money than me. Help
Like she
yourself
can
out.
clean her own rooms. I won't like keep her
Exactly. You can
room
do your own
dirty. Yeah.
instruments. You can do everything, you know, and it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter. Because honestly, I've like given assistance little, because I was making a bonus, I would try to recognize that they helped me make the bonus. So I would give them little gift cards, or I would buy pizza for the office and Whole Foods pizza. It wasn't cheap. It wasn't Cece's and everything. I would try to, you know, show them appreciation. And sometimes that would work and sometimes that wouldn't work. So sometimes, you know, in my situation, what did cause the issue at my office, in my opinion, allegedly, was there was a lead high assistant who basically, you know, the doctor had a fondness for this assistant. And so even if people left or got fired, or, you know, everyone would say, hey, this person is a bully, basically. And the doctor would be like, eh, I don't think so. Or, you know, so once that person had their mark on you, at some point you were going down. So initially I was like, well, let me never be in, you know, because I need to pay my mortgage. Never may let me never be in that radar. And then towards the end, somehow I got in the radar and we were going kind of head to head. You know, I'm not an aggressive person by any means, but basically that person was in the ear of the doctor, where the doctor was like, I heard you were yelling in the office meeting. And I was like, I've never yelled at my life at a job. Like, you know, I was not raised that way. By the time I would, if I'm gonna yell, that means I'm on my way out the door. And so it's just usually the dynamic is that there's someone who's causing issues. Sometimes it's an hygienist, sometimes it's an assistant, sometimes it's an office manager. So there's unfortunately has been issues between the hygiene community and the assistant community, especially if the hygienist was never an assistant. At times, if the hygienist was assistant, then they know all that goes into being an assistant and to respect them and everything. But at the same time, sometimes assistants just feel like you're getting paid to do this easy job, and so I'm never going to help you. It doesn't matter if the hygienist helps the assistants or flips rooms or takes X-rays or whatever. It's the thought that like, hey, you're getting paid all this money and you're not doing anything. So they may think that the hygienist job is easy because they haven't done it as well.
So let me ask you a question. Do you think that hygienists now want to even be hygienists? And let me ask you, let me explain that. A lot of dentists, right? They're more than just dentists now. They're, influencers. They're, they come up with different names and different titles for themselves. Like, I mean,
They're day traders and
they're a bunch of different stuff,
everything but
but
dentists. Yeah.
right, but they're not dentists. But the funny thing is, dentistry is what gets them to do that extra stuff. And I'm seeing the same thing with hygienists. And tell me if I'm wrong, that hygienists aren't just not hygienists anymore, right? It's, oh, I'm this and I'm that and I'm this and I'm that. But patients don't care. They just want a dentist. They just want a hygienist. So why is our mindset so different now in the dental field to always want to do more than what we went to school for and what got us here?
I disagree. I think patients do care. A lot of
They
patients.
want an influencer. If I go,
Well,
I don't make an appointment and say, "Hey, can I please have that influencer hygienist?" I say, "Can I get a hygienist to clean my
oh
teeth?"
no, they want a hygienist. So first they want
Right.
the hygienist. So first they
Right.
want me. I mean, first they want
Well,
me.
okay. Again, let's take
And
you out of
then,
the equation. You
but
are not
I'm
an
just saying
equation anymore.
But my, when I was, you know, starting all the different things I do now, my patients were very supportive because I talk to my patients, we talk about our lives, and all that is what gets the trust factor and why they do the treatment, because I'm telling them about what's good and bad, you know, to a degree, what's in my life, and they're telling me as well. So, but
you're still cleaning their teeth,
what do you mean?
Right?
Yeah.
Do you see what I'm saying? Like, it's not like they said, oh, clean my teeth. Now show me that you can juggle. You see what I'm saying? They just want their teeth cleaned.
And oh,
that's
yeah,
what
no.
I'm, you know, I'm not trying to be funny, but that's what I'm saying. It's like,
I clean their teeth, I do their care, what right. the care they needs to be done.
Yeah.
We may have talked about what trip I went on, what trip they
right.
went on.
Right.
I show them a picture. They show me a picture of their baby. I show
that's
them whatever.
It.
And so, yeah, so no,
why
you
do we
still
push
are.
So hard? Why do we push so hard to do other stuff? I mean, I get it that doing other stuff is good. Like having hobbies is great. I'm not saying that, but we always forget.
Like this. This is a hobby for
that's
us.
That's what
this
I'm
is
thinking.
Us,
right?
We ain't trying to get rich off
right
this.
Right. But, but to my patients, I'm a periodontist.
Yeah.
And I'll talk to them about what I do, but
right?
I'm here as a periodontist. I'm not a day trader. I'm not going to sit here and say that I am a day trader. I represent my. I'm a periodontist. So I don't understand what got to this point where we're basically everything but what we went to school for. Is my question. And I see that with both dentists and hygienists. And I want you to kind of see if you're seeing the same thing.
I'm not really seeing, I don't think I have never looked at it in that way. For the most part, I see where most of my colleagues, they are hygienists first. So even if they're speakers or, you know, authors or writers or whatever other thing they're doing, they usually are still practicing clinically if they can. And they may have other things that they're doing, which usually adds to the practice. So if the hygienist becomes a myofunctional therapist, usually that adds to the practice. So a lot of the different things that they're doing adds to the practice. One of my colleagues, she's dental hygienist, chiropractor, professor, and she still temps out an office and does their social media for them. So I don't think it's anything wrong with the person being multifaceted.
No.
But when they're seeing patients, they need to be seeing patients. You don't want to be someone like, well, who was that person who got in trouble who was like doing some type of surgery on a skateboard or something, you know?
Oh,
that
guy. He was on a hoverboard.
In Alaska, whatever he was.
Yeah. Or you've seen some videos where like they're taking videos of, you know, patients and the patient's like sedated and they're making fun. You don't want to, you know, when you're seeing the patient, you're doing the patient. That's your care. If you're doing anything else, then fine, you can do other things. But you know, you still at the same time when you're doing that, have to, in my opinion, should operate in a professional manner.
Maybe my question was misconstrued. My question is this: I feel like a lot of dentists and a lot of hygienists lead with everything else besides what they went to school for, which is to be hygiene. They lead with, I'm an influencer. They show that more than their actual skills. Does that make sense? And that's what I'm very confused about. Like, everybody is an influencer for everything else but what they went to school for, which is dentistry. And that's the part that I'm confused about. Do you think that that's just what society wants now? Or do you think that that's just what they want because they don't really want to do hygiene? They're hoping to kind of get out of that and go do their side hustle and excel with that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it. Okay, so a number of hygienists are hoping that they can get some type of other gig or side hustle. Okay. I would say a number who follow me are hoping.
You're
to
leading
maybe
the
that's
charge.
What I see.
So it's
that's
your
what
fault.
I see. Yeah, it's not my fault. It's just basically the fact of the matter. And I don't just say, hey, leave dentistry. But at the same time, I tell people to, why do you feel this way? Self-evaluate yourself. Why do you feel this way? Sometimes hygienists start hating their career. Mm. And I tell them, it's not your career. It's the office. Like, you chose the wrong office. Go choose another one. So in my course, I talk about being in proper alignment. So, you know, a lot of times we maybe don't recognize that we have power, that we are interviewing the doctor just as much as they are interviewing us and the office, and to see if what aligns together. So if you're interviewing me and you're telling me that I'm a periodontist, I don't really believe in hygienists doing SRP though, you're just going to do prophys. If that's not going to sit right with me, then I'm going to say, okay, well, thank you for that. And I'm going to find another office that is going to align with me better. And so the problem is a lot of times some hygienists are afraid to leave. I didn't leave a lot of offices mainly because I didn't want to have to deal with the interviewing process and, you know, the discrimination and all that. I don't want to have to be triggered. And so sometimes I just stayed because I'm like, this paying enough for my bills. I could be getting paid more, but at least this is covering. I'm helping out with my household. And so a lot of hygienists feel stuck, so they hate their profession. And it's
Well,
because they went to
let's
the wrong office. If they were
let
to go to another office, then that was checked all those green flags for them, then they wouldn't necessarily be looking for a way out.
right. Let me expound on something that you said, because this is something that has been near and dear to me because of my experiences. It's hard often for us to navigate spaces where we're not a high percentage, we're underrepresented, right? I would always go out of my way to try and find and recruit providers of color, especially black providers, hygienists, assistants, doctors, and so forth. What I found, though, and let me know if this is something you've experienced. If I get someone and it's, let's say, a hygienist or an assistant, they're black, we have a cultural vibe. There's things that we can talk about, references we'll get, and now everyone's giving the side eye like, oh, she's the favorite, right? By virtue of nothing else, then we just have a cultural connection, which is something we've always been on the outside of that cultural connection and been isolated. What is your advice to young black hygienists, male or female, when they are either in a position where they are the only one, like a lot of us, especially, in the Northwest, there's not a lot of us here. We're 3% of the population. We're often the only one. And then when they do find that cultural support, and all of a sudden it's a conspiracy. What are them two colored people talking about? Why are they so friendly? How do you navigate, or how did you navigate those spaces when you find yourself on either side of that equation, whether it's the isolation or now it's the there's a conspiracy because two black people are talking,
So I'm used to being isolated. I've lived in a number of states, and one was New Hampshire. So I'm used to being like the only one. That I'm used to, and that's maybe why, for the most part, I know how other people may think because I was raised around other ethnicities that did not look like me. I was used to being the only one. So I'm actually, you know, the person who talks about, oh, that basically I was told that I didn't act black enough or the way that I talked or so that's my narrative that I've dealt with. But the thing when I was at that office that I talked about where I was highly productive, initially both of the dentists were of color. It was wonderful for me. They really respected my treatment. To the fact where the doctor would be come to me and be like, hey, what do you think I should do in this case? Or what teeth do you think I should save? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not the dentist. Like, don't put that on me. What teeth you should save? Like, I don't know. But the fact that they would come to me and we would have these conversations concerning patient treatment, or they cared about me as a person or how things were going on with me.
They heard your voice. With
They
them,
heard
you
my
had a voice.
voice. And it was some days the huddles were like, it was like, blackish, honestly. It was like when he was at work and it was just great. And unfortunately, yes, that did make that lead assistant feel very uncomfortable. She kind of was like the mole for the owner. And so yes, that would make people uncomfortable. But that whole dynamic that you talked about really goes back to the history of our country and how where we knew we could not be too many at one time. So if there's too many of us at one time talking, then something must be going up. And so we know that. We know that we have to like maybe save it for lunchtime or you know, that's it's honestly that it is what it is at times.
Right. And I asked that
It's not
question
right
because
because
I know you talk
yes.
about diversity a lot. I listen to a couple of your thing your smiles at sea talks and on YouTube that were there. Is there a concerted effort in the hygiene industry to, because we know that creating providers of color improves patient outcomes. So it's not just numbers for numbers' sake, right? With every healthcare industry, you get better patient outcomes when you have greater representation amongst your healthcare field. Have you seen a concerted effort within the hygiene community to increase diversity and representation?
I believe the National Dental Hygiene Association, that's one of their missions, obviously. But also, I do know the Brown Girl RDH started by Martel Cole.
Yeah, we had her on the podcast.
Yeah,
she's been on a podcast before. She's awesome.
She has that. That's her mission, to increase diversity as well. And she offers scholarships, which are available for anyone. But that's her mission, to do that. The Delta Dental, they had a grant last year that they were doing that. I applied. I didn't know what I was doing, but I was like, hey, I'm trying. I'll come up with something. But that's something that they were doing. There's a organization that I work with, Cool Nerd Connect. And so Oren, he basically has where he had his, he has a nonprofit where he's going to high schools and middle schools trying to talk to kids, or we are virtually, or people in person, talk to the students about dentistry, being a competent dentist, hygienist, assistant, all that. So there's different organizations that are doing it, I believe. But I think, yes, it needs to be more of an effort, because I didn't see a hygienist who looked like me. My mom told me I should probably become a hygienist instead of an engineer. And so I was like, okay. I was always walking around like my son now with a toothbrush in my mouth. I always loved teeth. So it made sense to me. But I didn't, even for years, I didn't really see a lot of hygienists who looked like me for the most part. I finally got to work with one at one of the DSOs, and she became a bestie. And the dental hygienist chiropractor, she became a bestie. I took over her job while she went to chiropractor school. But yeah, it's not the norm. It's the norm for me to be the only. That's what I'm used to. And it can be very lonely. And it can, you know, I think that's why I got so upset, because, you know, I felt like I had done all the different things. I had tried not to be the stereotype, and still it's like, oh, you still see me this way. You know, so I just had that epiphany that many of us have at some point.
Okay. So we'll wrap it up here by asking, well, I'll ask you my last question, which is, what do you see when it comes to hygiene, on how to basically improve hygiene? What does a dentist need to do? What does a hygienist need to do to work together in order to improve the situation? Because we started the conversation by saying, hey, in Florida, they weren't getting paid well, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're at the diversity stage where we're having issues with that. And then we're also at a point where the environment is not really beneficial, right? So now let's talk about solutions. What can we do to make sure that the environment is there, the pay is there for everybody, and then just the equity is still there? What advice would you give?
Continue to have these conversations like we're doing now. Just having these conversations, because a lot of times there's like my Facebook group, it's all these different Facebook groups, and we're all kind of yelling at each other, you know, not at each other, but like in the dental group, you know, the dental hygienists, we see what the dentists are talking about, and then someone screenshots it, like, look what they're saying about us today. And then the hygienist group, you know, is mainly hygienists in my group. There are some dentists and other professionals, but then, you know, they're kind of cynical and upset about all the experiences they're doing. Mm-hmm. So in my course, I talk about, we need to stop having these different alliances. So in the office, you know, a lot of offices, especially if it's toxic, is going to be, you know, the dentist against the hygienist against the dentist, office manager. You know, everyone's forming these like survivor alliances. So we have to stop doing that and actually having conversations. Instead of having the office meeting about like, how can we just do production, you know, have a check-in. What's going on? How do you really feel? So instead of just when the hygienist is going to give her 2 weeks notice and now you're upset and mad and stuff, you know, way before that, what do you need? What's going on? Or, you know, you want a raise. I want to be able to give you a raise. But quite honestly, my finances aren't looking that good. So we need to make some changes so we can do that. What can we do? What, you know, I listened to this speaker or this consultant, and I don't want to do anything that you're against. But at the same time, I think we can increase patient care and then, you know, get the patients what they need and deserve. And at the same time, be able to, you know, help the bottom line of the office. So we have to have these uncomfortable conversations, basically. You know, it's not comfortable talking about diversity. When I spoke about it at the ADA at SmileCon a couple months ago, I frankly start off, I hate talking about it too. I won't talk about it, you know, well, but we have to have these conversations in order for things to change.
Yeah, I think America hates talking about it, but that's another story for another day. So
of course they don't like talking about their sins. So I got a last question, because this, as a business owner, this is some it's a question that I give with a lot of my friends that also have offices because they're struggling, right? And they're saying, yo, I got this really good, say, hygienist. But like I said earlier, she has all these other interests. I don't trust that at a moment's notice, she's going to see either an opportunity that's non-dental, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're pursuing whether it's social media or aesthetics or myofunctional therapy or whatever. what I want is to find someone that I can invest in that's going to be here long-term to get to know the patients, provide continuity of care, and isn't always on the lookout for a way to dip out the door. Because as a business owner, when you come to me and say, hey, I want to raise, I want this, I want to build this schedule, if I don't feel like you're giving me the vibes like you're going to be around for a long time, I'm not going to change my protocols and my program, even if you're the nicest person, if I don't feel you're invested. So how do you talk to all these hygienists that are in your group and say, hey, yeah, you can have your other interests, but you still have to show a commitment and not make it so obvious that you're just looking for your big break. You know what I mean? Like, I need someone as an employee that's going to be committed. So how do you suggest someone balances the other interests with how they represent themselves at work as far as their commitment level and their the trust that the owner will have them for a long time?
Tough question.
Well, I mean, the thing is that...
Because I can't compete with IG. If you think all of a sudden, if you wake up, you're like, you know what? The only reason I'm not big on IG is because I'm not putting in enough hours. So, Dr. Horton, I want to move to 2 days a week so I can pursue my IG dreams, right? That we see that a lot. I know it's funny, but we see that a lot. Or we get these lectures, you know, not to put you in that category, that will go around and tell doctors, hey, I can show you how to make, you know, 30, 40 grand in a day. And we're just like, well, if you could consistently make 30, 40 grand in a day, you wouldn't be teaching.
Talking to me.
Doing, right?
You wouldn't be talking to me about making 30, 40 grand in a day.
Right. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So how do you recommend someone handles their side hustles with their representation at work? Even just as a strategy. Keep your side hustle. How do you represent yourself at work?
But the thing is you keep trying to take me out the equation and I'm the equation.
So no, you hard. Are. We got to take you out because remember.
It's hard because I've always represented myself as a professional.
Right.
So I don't really know too many. I have not known hygienists who have not. So maybe that's a different generation. I am older than I look. So, you know, that everything. So maybe that's a generation because I've always represented myself to be a professional. I like to wear a white lab coat. When I wore a white lab coat, then actually I produced more money because patients saw me as being more professional. That was the psychology that I figured out. And so that's what I wanted to wear. When I went in to measure the patient's gums and, you know, talk to them about treatment, if I was wearing a regular lab coat that was provided by the company, it wasn't looked at the same.
Let me ask you, maybe let me ask the question this way, and Horton, please tell me if I'm wrong. When you're teaching other hygienists about doing their side hustle, is it as kind of like a just in case, or is it as a replacement for hygiene?
It depends. Everyone is going to, so everyone Did I, is
am
gonna
I,
want,
am I correct?
No, you can, Horton? I know what you guys are saying, but everyone is going to want something different. So some people want to replace hygiene. They can't physically do it. They're in pain or they're older or they can't, or they're just psychologically, they need out or they want to be with their kids more. So there's different reasons why hygienists, dentists, everyone are looking to get out of the industry. There's a lot of different reasons. So when I teach my course on alternative dental hygiene careers, I'm teaching them the different options. Or I had Doug Perry on the seminar who taught about how to update their resume or how to have a better resume or how to interview better. So there are other clinical positions out there. So some hygienists don't want to work in private office. They may want to work in mobile dentistry or at a hospital like one of my friends. There's a lot of other different type of practices that they want to be able to get into, or prison or Indian health and things. So I talk to them about networking and getting to those different things. So I'm not just telling hygienists, hey, become a myofunctional therapist, or hey, start your own whitening salon or something like that. We do need hygienists to service our patients. But if they're not happy, they're not giving good care to your patients, because they, at some point, they may not care, unfortunately. They're just on the slack. They're going to miss things. You know, they may start getting rude and a little snippy. So, but I understand what you're saying. So I feel that everyone needs to be professional. Although I feel that you can maybe, depending on the person, support their goals on social media, maybe, you know, it's have where you can use your operatory, but I don't want to see, you know, no one can recognize that this is the office. I don't want the name. You can't have any patients' information, whatever. But at the same time, it needs to be on your lunch break, or it can't be, you know, in between patients. And I don't want to work in an office, whatever. You need to have some ground rules and some boundaries as well. And, you know, recognize that, I don't know. I mean, most of the dentists have always supported. The ones that I've had great relationships with, and I still have today, they supported me in all the aspirations I ever wanted to do.
But you don't work for me.
No, but that's
the thing. They lost the great hygienist. That's what I'm saying.
No, but the thing is you can't have someone hostage. You can't. Right. So it's almost like, honestly, people are going to change. So if the doctor who I worked with initially when I came to Florida as an assistant, he was the one who wrote my wonderful letter to help get me into hygiene school. Mm-hmm. He's had a lot of assistants who became hygienists and everything. Mm-hmm. So it's because of supportive doctors like that who recognize, and most of the doctors who do well, who I know, who they allow that growth within their organization. And then they recognize that maybe that person will leave and maybe they'll come back. So I can understand, as an industry, as a doctor, you want someone who's going to stay there grow right. with the patient. I
especially
mean,
if they're great.
Every time I've told a doctor usually that I was leaving, I almost got cussed out. Everything, you know, a lot, especially if it turned hostile, because now they're recognizing, like, whoa, like, you know, it's gonna be hard to replace this person
that
really,
that's
you know,
it.
Put, you know, did it and everything. But basically, I feel that if you help the person grow, if the person is mature enough, then they're just going to continue to be an asset to your business. Yes, they may leave, or yes, they may stay and they end up helping up at the front as a treatment plan coordinator. Now they know everything, and some hygienists become the treatment plan coordinator, and the patient already, you know, had this relationship with them, and now they even trust them even more. So, like, trying to just get someone to stay and not grow doesn't usually work well, because you want to grow. You want to do things as well.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's like keeping that person stagnant is why so many people are leaving, because they feel like no one is supporting this beast inside of them. As opposed to years ago, when I told, like, one of the people of color, the female dentists I work with, hey, I think one day I want to become a consultant. And she's like, yeah, you do that. And she supported me, and she taught, you know. So when you breathe life into people, then they continue to breathe life into your practice. So that's
Listen, I'm just glad you're wearing a coat when you're working, because me and Walt have been talking. You look at all these IG doctors out there, they're wearing slacks and a t-shirt while they're doing surgery. That is the grossest thing to me.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, well, the first doctor I worked for, he wore shorts. So,
I just can't bring
happy.
That kind of stuff at home. I can't bring that stuff at home.
Yeah, but patients weren't happy about it and everything. But no, I understand what you guys are saying.
Yeah.
I get it. I think that, you know, social media is great, but sometimes people do go overboard on it. I do believe that flexibility is good. So if that hygienist comes to you and they want to work a couple days less, then if you can find someone else who can cover those other days, then at least that's someone who's not just totally quitting on you. So I don't know. I only gave you what I think. It's a tough thing right now with
this
shortage, but there's multifaceted why there's a shortage. And then I just think if we support one another and whatever we want to do, then usually that allows for continued growth in the industry, in my opinion.
Can you give us the names of your book? You mentioned that. Also your IG information. Basically, how do people get a hold of you?
Sure. So my book is on Amazon as ebook. It's called The Ultimate Guide for Dental Hygienist Burnout. You can get a hold of me on Instagram, social media.
We like social media. We're not against it.
At KMC.smiles. Or my last name is my email, basically, shirellasmiles@gmail.com.
And thank you so much. I mean, one thing that you said, which really resonated with me, was what you gave the advice you gave to Dr. Horton about twerking in his operatory. Very uncomfortable. He does it so, it's weird. Go on his IG, you'll see.
Wait, twerking?
It's uncomfortable what he does with IG.
Twerking?
So thank you for being professional and teaching him to be professional. All right, no. No, I'm messing around. No,
More
honestly,
fake news.
this was really informative. I wanted to lighten up the mood a little bit, but this was real informative. I really do appreciate it. And I think what you said is true, right? You can't restrict somebody's growth, but the one thing you can't do is also you can't you can't I guess you can't always be happy for people's growth either, because you're like, man, I'm losing out on this amazing hygienist, but I can't restrict them. So the dentist is kind of stuck in the middle trying to figure out how to do it. And I don't think we solved the problem tonight, but I do believe we have a good basis for what we need to do in order for us to have a harmonious environment. And because in the dental office, like you said, sometimes it's not really that peaceful. Right? And
No.
then it could only take one person to make that whole environment very very toxic. So we
This is what we
appreciate.
do. We invest in genetic engineering, and we just clone Carrie,
There it is.
and then we just lease all these clones out.
Listen, I
It's a
probably got clones
business. It's a
already,
business.
honestly. People have come up to me my whole life saying that I look like somebody, or think I'm their cousin or something. So
it
I
is.
got clones out there,
There it is.
so
There it is. But thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate your
Indeed.
time. And we know how busy you are, so we really do
Yes.
appreciate you taking the time to even just come on here. So thank you so much.
You're
Yeah,
welcome.
great convo. Appreciate you.
Yeah, man, it was
Thanks for
awesome.
having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Tooth Be Told. The opinions on this episode are just that, our opinions. Please consult your dental professional before taking any action with your dental health. If you have any questions about anything you heard on this episode, please contact us at Real Dentist with an S. That's REAL Dentist with an S at gmail.com. We would be very happy to return any message that we receive, because we love the communication that we have with our listeners.